We're talking about analytic properties of exponential integrals or dependence on parameters of solutions and differential equations. That's a structure which we introduced with Maxim Kantsevich. It's called wall crossing structure. And I will consider a very special case. And this which we call stability data. Graded Lie algebras. So it will be very formal, but later we will see examples. So this was discussed, this query was discussed in our paper on Donaldson-Thomas invariants, same as BPS invariants. So what's the data? So we have a lattice. Charge lattice. We have a graded Lie algebra. Let's assume for simplicity over complex numbers. We have the homomorphism of groups, abelian groups, central charge. And most important, we have a collection of elements. For all non-zero charges. So let's just encode them one A of gamma. And so we say that all these define the stability data on this Lie algebra if these data satisfy just one axiom, which we call support property. And basically, it says that the support of this collection is separated from the kernel of the central charge. It can be mathematically said in the following way. There exists a quadratic form such that Q is say negative on the kernel of the central charge. And Q is non-negative if A of gamma is non-zero, so which means that Q restricted to the support of this collection is non-negative. So it's kind of geometric picture, like in three dimensions. If the central charge is just projection the xy plane, so something like this. And so this means that charges of stable elements, if you'd like, because informally it should be thought of a collection of the BS invariants, so they are separated from the kernel of the central charge, which is just a vertical. So this is the language in which one can describe various wall crossing formulas, and that's why we introduced it. So there are two main examples. Which will appear in my talk. One is it's related to GIO, Chakotay-Wafa wall crossing formulas. So in this example, G will be just Lie algebra GLN. Gamma is a root lattice. For the Lie algebra GLN, so can be like is the Lie algebra, it is generated by simple matrices. So to define the central charge one fixes a collection of complex numbers, so pairwise different. And so then if you take some standard basis in the root lattice, gamma in j, so z of gamma in j is something like zi minus zj or the other way around. And the most kind of essential thing is these invariants, which in practice they determine either from geometry or from physics, depending on which side you are in. So, but it's an additional piece of data, which are some integer numbers. So another example, it's 4D n equal 2. Supersymmetric gauge theories. It's also named after us with Maxim, the corresponding wall crossing formulas. Then one starts typically with the lattice, which carries also an integer valued symmetric form, for example, symplectic. And so then there is a torus, character torus, and this lattice, something like C star in the power n. So the algebra of functions on this torus, there is a Poisson bracket induced by this Q symmetric form, and so that's a Lie algebra. And it is graded because it's spanned by monomials. So then, like, depends whether you want to write as a Lie bracket or as a Poisson bracket, so it's something like the manual. So this is finite dimensional, this that one is infinite dimensional. Mm. So if one has in general the stability data on the graded Lie algebra, then one can do the following. Suppose that we have a cone, a strict cone, in the vector space generated by the lattice. Strict means that it does not contain inside the straight line, so just on the plane, and this means that this is prohibited. The straight line, so it should be less than 180 degrees. Then we can define an element which depends on the cone, which is basically the product of so more precisely, these cones say appear in the following way. We take in R2, we take some strict a sector less than 180 degrees. Then we look for all for its preimage and intersect with the set of elements for which the quadratic form is non-negative, which means this means that we are interested in such charges for which A of gamma is not equal to zero, this condition. And so with every such, so let's call this C of V. It's a cone of this type, which is defined in terms of the sector. And then we can define an element, which is the product in the clockwise direction of inputs, all possible rays. Actually, V can be degenerate, in particular, it can be a ray. And A of L, its exponent of the sum of A of gamma with Z of gamma, which belongs to L. So it's a sort of a group element corresponding to some Lie subalgebra, and this factorization resembles the decomposition of the element of the group into the product of elements corresponding to some root lattice, which is exactly the case for GLM. This is a main player in the wall crossing business, and it satisfies some nice properties, in particular if we decompose a sector V into two subsectors, then as it's seen from the definition, this also decomposes, and so then you can either use this property to write down such a formula or the other way around. And basically, this is a wall crossing formula although maybe it looks too abstract. And the first glance. So it contains this collection of A of V. This collection depends on the central charge by definition, because the cones depend on them. So then the wall crossing formula technically says that this collection doesn't change when we change the central charge in such a way that no new charges enter to a sector go away. All right. So this is some formal construction. And now let's see how this structure appears in a sort of very well-known story. So I present it in finite dimensions, but as I will point out later, it can be generalized to higher dimensions, namely to infinite. So let's start with something like very simple, like algebraic variety or complex manifold, non-compact. Let's fix the dimension first. We assume that it's finite. Fix the potential function. If it's algebraic, we may think that it's a regular function, like something like polynomial, or it can be holomorphic with some nice behavior at infinity. If X is non-compact. All right. So I will make a couple of simplifying assumptions, so then everything will be straightforward and can be computed by hands. So one assumption is that critical values critical set is a finite set, and the corresponding critical values are all different. All right, so then we have a collection of complex numbers. The object which we can associate with this story is an exponential integral. So we need to assume that there is a kind of a volume form. So X can be something like C, and it's already an example. So it's a top degree form, holomorphic form. Nowhere vanishing. Let's call it volume form, so that's an notation. So the whole thing is closed, so then it's clear that this story is just a small variation of the usual story about periods of differential forms. So we are dealing with a twisted Durham complex, and this is a twist. All right. Now, the integration cycle. So the integration cycle, if we are in complex dimension n, so it should be real dimension n. So it could be an element some relative homology group. Let me write it down. This group in this strange way. So this is minus infinity. So basically what is written here is that we take sufficiently negative number, take the preimage, and take the relative homology. So then this integral has a meaning because the real part of the exponent will go to minus infinity as t is, as t goes to minus infinity. So the integral is well defined. So this is, if you'd like, well, not really a lattice, but it's very closely related to the lattice which I wrote before. Well, we can think that it's a lattice. Mm. Okay. So then the question is about.
So what is t?
If you know, t is any number. The homology group stabilizes. If t is sufficiently negative, positive, or it doesn't matter. But I prefer to have t sufficiently negative, any t which is sufficiently negative. Because it's integer homology group, it doesn't purely topological. Okay. So the question is about analytic properties of this integral with respect to the Planck constant. So of course it's not the way we can do it perturbatively, but I would like to see some analytic behavior and to understand what's the meaning of this analytic behavior, and maybe in the end to explain it in some abstract terms. Okay. So so first we observe that this middle homology, they are they have a nice set of generators called symbols. So let's assume also for simplicity that X is scalar. It's not really a big restriction, but it will simplify the exposition. Assume X is scalar. So this middle homology group is generated. By symbols. So there is a collection, let you know them all like this. And there are as many of them as the number of critical points or critical values, doesn't matter. So symbol. Since I assume that this is scalar, so I can say that this is a non-compact Lagrangian subvariety in my X. Mm. So if Xi is a critical point, so I can just shoot from this critical point the gradient lines of the real part of my potential. And now maybe I should rescale it. Maybe this h, maybe for simplicity I will assume until I will need it that h is equal to zero. Mm. But maybe I will need it very soon. Not zero by one. Okay, so these are gradient lines. And so they fill together a real n-dimensional Lagrangian subvariety. It's the same as Hamiltonian trajectory for the imaginary part of the potential, and for either of those of that reason, so the projection of the thimble is a ray. It's a ray which kind of how it comes from the critical value and goes to infinity, minus infinity. So then we have a bunch of critical values, and this is the picture on the W plane, on the plane of values of my potential, and on top of each of these rays we have a thimble. So every plus gamma is an integer combination of thimbles. We can integrate over a thimble because of our choice. Yeah, the real part is of the potential goes to minus infinity along the thimble. So for every k, we can write down kind of a basic integral and every other integral is just a linear combination of these.
You said it's n-dimensional.
Yeah, it's because I made some oversimplifying assumptions. In general, if, for example, W is not Morse in this sense. So actually, I didn't. Oh, I forgot to write it down. Yeah, thank you. I said it in words, but didn't write it down. Each critical point is Morse, which means that near the critical point, W is zi plus whatever coordinates. So it's value plus a quadratic form.
But then why gamma is in n minus 1? Is n minus 1 dimensional
cycle? Because volume is an n dimensional, like if you have complex one form, you can integrate it over paths of a real one cycle. Have complex n form to integrate it over a cycle of dimension 1. So that's again, you can try to generalize this story to up to I don't know to what, to take exponent of some differential form, not just of the function. So there are many possibilities to generalize this story, but I think it looks pretty basic. That's the point which I would like to make, that there is some interesting structure even here. All right, so that's an example. This is Lagrangian, which means that if, for example, my x was cn, like r to n, so then I am integrating over something which is real and dimensional. like if it was a matrix integral, I would integrate, say, over a space or a cycle of Hermitian matrices, for example, which also has dimension 1/2 of the dimension of the whole complex space. So anyway, so I have a collection of such integrals. Let's take a look at what happened with these integrals. So I can order Zi, maybe better to say Zi over H, because the critical value of this is not Zi, but Zi over H. I should order them by imaginary parts. Which means that, like, in the simplest possible way, when they are all horizontal, so I can order them something like Z1, Z2, and so on, Zn. So this order is essential because basically, if you look for I can try to compute the asymptotics of this integral, you will see something like this, the first term of the asymptotics, and therefore something happened when imaginary part of the differences, they coincide. So so this basis, ordered basis, so it behaves nicely. It's kind of a space fixed. Doesn't jump, like doesn't change. If we stay outside of Stokes arrays. So which means that generically, we see these lines say parallel, but when we, for some specific values of H, so let me draw the, sorry, this picture in the complex plane. So there are some directions which depend on the critical value when we have some changes of the basis. So if, for example, this critical value, which was, say, smaller in the sense of my order, if it becomes bigger, which means that this ray moves here, yeah. So then we have a simple change of basis called the Kapper-Lifschitz formulas in mathematics, and Nij is some integer number, which it has many different interpretations. So how one can think about Nij? one can think about Nij as about the number of gradient lines to my potential with joint number of gradient lines between two critical points. One can interpret it as an intersection index of two half-dimensional submanifolds in my manifold X. They are also Lagrangian, so it gives a hint that probably the story can be related to some Floer theory. Or one can do the following. One can take the complex symplectic manifold, which is a cotangent bundle to X. So inside there is a zero section and there is a graph. Let me write it down in this way. There are two complex Lagrangian submanifolds. One is zero section and the other one is a graph of a closed one form, this one. So the intersection points correspond to critical points of the potential, and these gradient lines, they're in one-to-one correspondence with the pseudo-holomorphic disks. With the boundary on these two Lagrangian. So this is exactly what people doing Floer theory are interested in. So then like these are sort of an instanton corrections to some unperturbed story when we consider just the Lagrangians themselves. So anyway, so these are integer numbers. And what we can do, we can construct a wall crossing structure. So if we look for this C star without a set of Stokes rays, then on this space, it's a union of Stokes sectors. So the sector between two Stokes rays is a Stokes sector. We have on this union of Stokes sectors, we have a local system of lattices. It's a slight generalization of the story. That we can have not just a single lattice, but a local system of lattices. That's exactly what happens, for example, for Hitchin integrable systems. So local system of lattices. In fact, it's a pure topological thing, so the lattice does not really seriously depend on the point H. So it sends a collection of numbers to their sum. So I take the kernel. Basically, this means that if I look for differences zi minus dj and add them up, I get zero. So then it's the same as a root lattice, something like a minus one. All right. Similarly, I have a local system of graded Lie algebras. In fact, they are matrix algebras. I'm just looking, maybe I forgot what I wrote. If I wrote hn minus 1, it was wrong. It should be hn. Maybe that's what the question. We take something like this, say over complex numbers, so some matrix algebras. They kind of, they slightly depend, it looks like they slightly depend on H, but in fact, they can be locally identified because we can do it at the level of symbols outside of Stokes' race. Mm-hmm. So the central charge is the same as before. Maybe I should rescale it and to make it dependent also get a local system of central charges. All right, and these BPS invariants are, of course, Nij product with the matrix units. So it's the same matrix unit as before. So just one and the other zeros. Okay, so this is the wall crossing structure or stability data. Stability data is a special case, more general notion. And so then there is a wall crossing formula here. So the walls in the space of central charges, it's a generically, it's a real codimension one subvarieties, and they correspond to the phenomenon when three critical values lend to the same real line. So Chakotay-Wafa wall crossing formula can be written. So basically, it's identity of large matrices, M by M matrices, but in fact, only 3 by 3, only GL3 piece kind of appear in the wall crossing formula. And this is an identity which is equivalent to this, to the factorization formula which I wrote some time ago. So I don't know if this is, say, A, this is B, and this is C, then this product equal to a very much similar product. I don't know whether it's visible or not. It's C and A, the same C and the same A, but just interchanged in the opposite order. And in the middle, you have the matrix, which well, depending on the orientation, we have, can have plus or minus. So this is a wall crossing formula for this number of solitons which appear in the Chikotieva story. And so what we can do with this and what we can learn in terms of this exponential integral. The point is that okay, so maybe I'll formulate some result and then it will be clear. So let's modify a little bit. Let's call them JK. It's a modification.
Hmm?
Yeah, something not changing, something changes. Yes. Local system of lattices, it basically doesn't change if you write it in this way. But technically speaking, if you would like to interpret it as a collection of some numbers which depends on H, like Xi divided by H, so then it depends on H, but in a sort of
very clear. But it's not like gamma itself is not this relative homology group.
Gamma itself is not. That's why I. Yes. It's a root lattice for JLN. All right. So it's. It's some modification, if you'd like. A slight modification of these symbol integrals. So as H goes to zero, this is indeed formal power series. And if we look in these Picard-Lefschetz formulas, which I have removed, but they are still present in as wall crossing formulas, because it's of course a corollary of this Picard-Lefschetz, very simple corollary. So then when we exchange ZK and ZL, like two symbols, and then we have the following jumps for this modified quantities. So we have, therefore, a Riemann-Hilbert problem. Which we can solve. And this Riemann-Hilbert problem depends on these numbers Nij. Maybe I missed NKL. So in general, it depends on this collection Nij and the critical values. And it's a Riemann-Hilbert problem on the H plane. So then we can solve it. And starting with purely formal expansions, which in infinite dimensions, it's just formal applications of Feynman rules, we can construct a holomorphic glue holomorphic bundle, in this case of rank M. So this gluing procedure goes like this. We start with some trivial bundle on the complement on the union of Stokes sectors, and then when we cross the Stokes ray, which correspond to the pair of critical values, so we apply the matrix which has only one non-trivial entry. So then we have G of H. And so the claim is that if we just consider everything formally, you know, if you look at this matrix, you will see that it has some exponentially small terms as long as the real part of the I is smaller. So then no matter in which sector I sit, the Taylor series, understood as a formal series, it has the same formal expansion. So then I have J formal, which is an element, if you like, of the loop group. And I have also this J formal. Something like this. Which is a collection, if you like, of Feynman integral expansions of some standard integral. But it's, again, both things are purely formal. So the point is that if I combine them together, it's a plane. Is analytic. Let me write it in this way. In this particular case, it's analytic in a much, much bigger, I mean, it's analytic everywhere because it's a finite story. But if you go, if you replace the function by the closed one form, which is not necessarily exact, or if you go to infinite dimensions, then this radius of convergence in general will be finite. Mm. But again, so that's a way to study in infinite dimensions. So what I just said to you, of course, it's kind of a very long elementary introduction to the story which works in infinite dimension. Assuming so, for the same purpose. And again, it's not absolutely kind of general, but we may assume that the action, which is a priori real, in fact, it's kind of, it admits an analytic continuation itself, something like, I don't know, like Chern-Simons, or holomorphic Chern-Simons, which is holomorphic from the very beginning. So the point is that even if we do not know what is the integration cycle, and we don't know for holomorphic Chern-Simons, for example, how to construct this quantum field theory, we can derive a lot of information from finite dimensional and classical story. because in order to obtain something analytic, we need two things. We need these numbers, nij, which you saw it was a number of gradient lines. So which means that we need to deal with some classical field theory and look for a number of solutions. Hopefully it's an elliptic problem of some Euler Lagrange equations. This gives us in general a collection of numbers, maybe infinite, which let me call them loosely, but in this case it's exactly, in the case of Chern-Simons, number of gradient lines between critical points of my action, like number of solutions to Kapustin Witten equation, something like that. Quite complicated stuff, but it's a classical problem. And suppose we know it, then we have the Riemann-Hilbert problem, and we have some analytic object. Then we need another piece, which is purely formal, which is just Feynman expansion, perturbative expansion of this integral. And so if we have these two data, then we can construct an analytic extension of non-existing, a priori non-existing integral. All right, of course, this is more or less one half of what I plan to talk about. But since I started like 2 minutes late, maybe I'll say a few words about holomorphic Floyer theory. I already mentioned that Floyer theory is relevant, yeah, because the counting of number of gradient lines between two critical points is the same as the counting of a number of holomorphic disks with boundaries on two Lagrangians. So what this story is about, what's the geometric framework for which this, all this is a special case. A more general geometric framework is the following. We have complex symplectic manifold, finite dimension, assume that it's finite dimensional. Inside, we have two complex Lagrangian submanifolds, L1 and L2. And we look for the space of C infinity paths with real paths, like maps from 0, 1 to M, with boundary conditions on this Lagrangian. So this is an infinite dimensional complex symplectic manifold. If M is scalar, X is also scalar in infinite dimensional sense. Now, if on this space X, always there is a closed one form. Let's call it eta, which is basically, okay, so I can write down kind of its mathematical definition, but it's clear what is it. So this is the projection which sends the pair path and the point to its value. So this is evaluation map. So very often this form, often, it's a differential of some function. For example, if my holomorphic form is a differential of one form, which can happen, say, for the cotangent bundle, and if the restriction of this is a differential of some functions which sit on my Lagrangian, so this is called M is exact, and this means that each of the Lagrangians is exact, then there is a potential which for some reason I denote by F, not by W. I don't know why. Which is given explicitly by this. And so we have an infinite dimensional space, we have a potential, so we can play that game. There are several generalizations. Instead of a single L1, we can consider a family, which is parameterized by some base. If we have L1 and L0, what we are dealing with, we are dealing with the Floyer homology of these two things, and I can make them depending on the Planck constant if I rescale my symplectic form by H. In fact, what I was talking about is just story about the Floyer homology between the graph of the differential of the potential and the zero section in the cotangent bundle. Now, you can, and this was a story about two-dimensional wall crossing formulas. If you consider the family of potential depending on the parameter, and in this case it can be implemented by considering a family of Lagrangians, which is parameterized by some base, then along the base you have a connection, sort of a Gauss-Manning connection. And in that case, we have a mixture of 2D and 4D. So the wall-crossing formulas which appear in the story, it's what is known as 2D / 4D wall-crossing formulas. And this is a geometric meaning of them. So furthermore, the Stokes phenomenon, the Stokes rays, as I explained in this toy model example, Stokes rays corresponded to the situation when we have a disk between the graph of the differential and the zero section. So here the story is similar, but in the case when symplectic manifold is not exact, for example, something like C star square, case of quantum spectral curves, then the situation is more complicated. We can have an additional instanton corrections in the form of disks with a boundary on the individual Lagrangian. So like this corresponds to the wall crossing formula where we go to the boundary of the moduli of gradient lines when the gradient line becomes kind of a piecewise smooth. So which means that we go to the boundary in the moduli space of disk, and this is a new component of the boundary which is responsible for this 4D part in the wall crossing story. And also, as a special case of this family picture, we obtain some nice, can obtain some interpretation of the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, because as I told you, in the direction of B, we have a bundle with connection, a sort of a D module, and with a certain bounds on these numbers, if there is a kind of an exponential bound on the number of gradient lines, we can prove that indeed the corresponding series which appear in the end, they are analytic in some finite disks. So that explains many results about analyticity, which are observed in, say, mathematical physics. Okay. Yes, for I think there was a work of Gukov and somebody else independently, maybe Marini, I don't remember.
Presumably, you're using some bounds on the power center of Feddenberg and sort of funding.
Absolutely not. So, no. It's a kind of a dead end because the number of graphs grows exponentially, more than exponential. No, no. That's the whole point. That from the Feynman story, I use just formal rules which give me some formal series. That's
so, if you're trying to prove this product is analytic by putting bounds on something, how do you need to control? Isn't J, J was all the time
you got this, right? J. Okay, so it's not direct. So I shouldn't say that everything is trivial. Toy model example was.
Toy model example was analytic because the integral was modified. There was an a priori.
But the explanation why. The fact is trivial, the explanation was not trivial, because the explanation goes to infinite dimensions. So, the point is that this thing is a solution to some Riemann-Hilbert problem. And this Riemann-Hilbert problem depends on this n of gamma. So, which means that, for example, for 2D story, there is an explicit answer obtained by Gajota Murinetsky some time ago. Maybe, I don't know, 8 years ago, kind of explicit multiple integral. And just looking at this explicit integral, it in terms of this Nij, it involves kind of a multiple products and some integrals, for which the convergence can be proved, some finite dimensional. And so then the only estimate you need is on this product.
So the point is those estimates control the whole product G times J, not just
yep.
G times.
Just one more question, Max.